Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, June the 2nd, 2024. It is almost, tomorrow will be, what, the 30th anniversary of the, well, not the 30th anniversary, right, because the first, anyway, it'll be 30 years to the date since Mitsuharu Misawa and Toshiaki Kawada went one-on-one on June 3rd, 1994. Can you believe it? Anyway, today on the program, we will discuss some things. I'm going to go through the latest details that we've learned about the Janelle Grant lawsuit and how that's going on hold, as well as we'll go through some merchandise rankings. Bring your maniac friends out. Share the link because this is free today. We'll go through some merchandise rankings. We'll go through quarter hours, all these things that are only for subscribers. The whole theme of this program today will be that you should sign up for $5 a month at least, or $10 a month at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. But anyway, we'll go through quarter hours, merchandise rankings. WrestleMania set the new records that we know more specifically now than ever, thanks to our friends at the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. But I also want to today set the table for all of you listening in masses today, perhaps, and explain, just let's do a state of the wrestling industry and talk about what exactly is going on in terms of the popularity of WWE and yes, AEW as well. We'll talk about how, you know, not necessarily popularity has everything to do with the financial future of these companies and so forth and things of that nature. In any case, let's get started with the slides here. So before we get into this, we're going to talk about TV ratings for a moment. But first, we have to talk about the annoying caveat that always has to come up around discussions about TV ratings, and is that, but what about cord cutting? Tony Khan brings this up often now, as AEW's TV ratings are substantially down year over year. So I've laid out the data here to give us a baseline of what is, well, how much is cord cutting down? Well, the TV industry, everything is down. The cord, nobody's canceling. Everybody has cable now and everybody's canceling it. So how much is cable down? Cable, satellite, virtual MVPD. Do you know what virtual MVPD is? When people ask me, but does this include YouTube TV and Hulu TV? That's what a virtual MVPD is. If you're watching it with the traditional ad feed, if you're watching it with the same ads that people are watching it with on cable and on satellite, you're probably counted in the Nielsen ratings. Anyway, how much is cord cutting happening? 9%. What we have here is some great research from LRG Research, which goes through all the filings for all these publicly traded companies that do provide cable and satellite and VMVPD services. And I guess what this guy does is he goes through these filings each quarter, and he sends out this great report that has the number of subscribers for each of these services. So this is not the entire traditional TV universe here that we're looking at, but it's a really big chunk, perhaps the majority. And what I did here is I did a weighted average. Yeah, we're starting it out with the heavy-duty math. I did a weighted average, and the answer that we get here is year over year, how much are cable subscriptions being cut? By a rate of about 9%. And that affects TV ratings because it lessens the availability of these networks that we're about to talk about. So 9% is the answer. If you want to, you know, use a handicap and adjust everybody by a certain rate, 9%. We'll go with that, okay? So Dynamite is down in the end of May. We're at the end of May here. We're 5 months through the year. That's almost halfway through the year, according to my sources. And Dynamite is down in total viewership 15% in May. The year before, the month before that, it's been down double digits in every single month in total viewership. 13, 11, 10, 12, and 15%. Dynamite is down substantially. Oh, but that's just total viewership. What about the demo? Okay, what about the demo? The demo is down 19% in May for Dynamite. For Dynamite, 19%. That is lower. Negative 19 is a lesser value, I believe, than 9%. I think we can say based on, you know, and we do have, let's be fair, in the demo, you have 9% in March and April. These declines were not as severe until May. So be that as it is, be that as it may, what we've got here is a mostly negative story that cannot be excused and explained away by cord cutting. Mostly negative, not horrendously negative, but a mostly negative story. Maybe you want to say these first 4 months of the year in the demo can be explained away by cord cutting. However, the total viewership is down by a rate greater than the rate of cord cutting. So a mostly negative, not atrociously negative story here. And well, yes, we'll talk about the rank, and the rank is stable here in Dynamite, just to spoil that for you. Collision, we have no year-over-year comparisons yet, but we are coming up. Oh, we're coming up as the month has turned to June here. There's going to be some unfavorable comparisons skewed by the really high viewership for Collision at the beginning that has not continued, right, as they average 400,000 viewers. In any case, you can look at May and say, okay, that did about 450 on average, 450,000 viewers on average, and yes, we're excluding the preemptions here, and I guess that's about where it left off at the end of the year. In any case, we'll start to have some what I would say are more realistic comparisons as we go into the summer. So there's going to be some especially negative comparisons for Collision on the first opportunity, just as there were in the case of Rampage early in its history. Rampage has been all over the place, right? And it's been preempted quite a bit. And what we have is, I don't know if I did not like count some of these episodes for Rampage as preemptions. In any case, it's been down double digits in some months this year. It's been down single digits in some months this year. So at best, a mixed bag, although it is up 32% in the demo in May for whatever reason there. I'll have to check to make sure I've got all those marked as preemptions. And then let's talk about WWE. NXT continues to be up tremendously in a challenged environment with cord cutting where, you know, maybe you would expect things to generally be down about 9%. NXT in the demo is up 28% in May. It is up 11% in total viewership in May. So Shawn Michaels is economically speaking, doing a great job with NXT as that show continues to, and it's in its second year here of positive comparisons. Last year, every month in the demo was up. Every month in the demo last year was up, and now we're in a new year, and every month in the demo has been up for NXT. So what about Raw, though? In the case of Raw, we are in relatively unprecedented times as it concerns WWE Raw, which is this cleanest example because it's unlike SmackDown. It has not been all over to different networks and whatnot, and it's not on a broadcast network, whereas it used to be on a cable network. No, it's been on USA Network for many, many years. Of course, that's coming to an end, but it has been on USA Network for many, many years. It's been on Monday Night for its entire history. And what we have here is, you know, we're looking at a table here for people listening in audio only. We're looking at a table here that goes back to 2015 and shows you year-over-year differences going forward from that point. And it's all negative, almost. I would say vast majority of these comparisons year-over-year are negative until you start to get a little bit in the summer of 2021 when it's being compared to the low viewership COVID times, where you had no fans. But then things really start to get positive, especially in the demo in a little bit in mid-2022. Can you think of anything that happened in mid-2022? We might talk about that later. And then especially in early 2023, especially in the demo, you do see a lot of positive comparisons. We're almost at every month. That looks like 10 out of 12 months to me in the demo were positive in 2023. And again, kind of like NXT, you had a year of mostly positive comparisons there, and now you're still getting some positive comparisons in this year. So not only sustaining the gains and improvements of the prior year in a continuously challenged environment for cable television, but continuing to see some growth here in most of the months of this year, year over year. the story in total viewership is not as positive, but in the demo, where you could argue that the demo is, it's more impressive that you're up in the demo and the total viewership, be that as it may. You want to sell ads and tell your TV carries about the future of TV. And besides that, this television medium is skewed by old people watching it anyway. So you're really, if you're thinking about popularity, the demo is probably telling you a truer story because we're excluding all those old people 50 years and older and looking at the younger people in that television audience who are not as well represented. In any case, if we're thinking about popularity and about ad rates, okay, that's raw. In really unprecedented times here, in terms of since I've been, this is really the entire history of since I've been covering wrestling business, it's just been a negative story about Raw that everybody reached for excuses about, and then lo and behold, for some reason, viewership is up. Okay, but what about SmackDown? SmackDown, all I've got on the screen is the Fox era, so we're looking at 2020 and forward, and in the demo, SmackDown is up in the demo every month this year. Again, it is a more mixed story in terms of total viewership, although I would say it is more positive in total viewership in terms of that story in total viewership versus Raw. So continuing to see, again, 2023, 10 out of 12 months, you had positive comparisons in the demo. And this year, not only sustaining those gains in this challenged environment where everything is maybe down by 9%, and I know it's broadcast, and you could pick it up on your rabbit ears, but nobody does that but me. In any case, it's not only sustaining the gains of last year, but improving on them in the demo, certainly, and somewhat in total viewership as well. So the story here, if the question is WWE's popularity improved to the extent to which TV ratings tell us that? They're telling us an overwhelmingly positive story here in terms of if we're going to use TV ratings to ask the question, is WWE's popularity improving? Yes. Almost a completely resounding positive answer to that question. And we see that across Raw, SmackDown, NXT, basically. In the case of AEW, do we see a story that tells us about the popularity of AEW? Is it up? Is it down? It's moderately down. It seems to be moderately down. We'll go back to looking at the rankings in a moment, but we'll at the rankings of the ratings in a moment. We'll talk about media value and things like that in a second. But let's, while we're going down this popularity route, let's talk about ticket sales, which we have an impression of through estimated tickets distributed, which is an estimate by WrestleTix of the ticketing map of the what we presume are the sales plus the comps, the free tickets plus the sales. And WrestleTix does a great job of tracking that. And I've averaged these numbers together and done comparisons of them. And what we have here is SmackDown. We're 2/3 of the way through Q2 now. And SmackDown is up averaging 12,500, which is the highest point since the return to touring in 2021, continuing to be up. It's been up every quarter so far this year. Dynamite is down double digits by worse than 20% in two consecutive quarters here. It did have a decent Q4, but Dynamite is down. And you've got, of course, Collision events happening in here too. Collision quarter to date averaging 3,300. Dynamite averaging the lowest number since the return to touring, averaging 3,700. So what stories get told here? By the way, okay, yeah, Raw is continuing to be up year over year. Double digits, up 17% in this quarter. House shows, even house shows, up 10%, averaging 6,700 in this quarter. Is that, I think that is helped probably by some international events. Maybe that average will go down as the quarter finishes here into June. Nonetheless, I thought they're probably going back to international. I don't know. Anyway, it's up 10%. You get an overwhelmingly positive story here. There's no cord cutting. There's no headwind here like cord cutting when it comes to ticket sales. Perhaps there's a tailwind because live events are just, you know, sort of generally more popular here or for some reason. But in any case, you get an overwhelmingly positive story here for WWE. We have what? We have what's the 4x312 year-over-year comparisons here for Raw, SmackDown, and house shows combined. And every one of them is positive. Most of them are double digits positive. And in the case of Dynamite, and again, we'll be coming up on some, we could do a year over year comparison on Collision. Obviously it would be negative and it would be a partial quarter with like last year's second half of June being the only relevant period of Q2 last year. And in any case, you can look at the linear trend, the sequential trend and say, yeah, Collision is down. although it is up from the prior quarter. In any case, we get a mostly negative story about AEW because three out of the last 4 year-over-year comparisons for Dynamite are down. In sum, well, what I get there is, yeah, we're looking into this as you know, another item to say, yeah, AEW popularity is moderately meaningfully down, and WWE popularity is up, and it's not going back down after WrestleMania. It's not, there's no true narrative to be had about, well, it had a really good WrestleMania run, but it's cooling back off. It's not cooling back off. If anything, it's continuing to slightly grow on the gains of last year. But wait, is that fair? They've been to different markets. What about when you compare a Raw, let's say, or a SmackDown to the last time a Raw or a SmackDown respectively were in the same market, and we get mostly positive stories? Yeah, I prepared for that too. We've got mostly positive stories here about WWE, and you can see back in 2022 where there were not as many positive stories, where there were more negative stories, and there are some negative stories for WWE market to market, same event, same market. There are some negative stories in 2024, late 2023. There are some, but overwhelmingly, those stories are positive, as demonstrated in the green here. But what about AEW? We get mostly negative stories when we're comparing. Basically, all we have to compare at this point is Dynamite. We're looking at a Dynamite in a given market compared to the last time the Dynamite was there in that market. And what we have is mostly negative stories. A few positive stories, but mostly negative stories. I would conclude from this that W popularity is up, AW popularity is down. But is AW going out of business? Oh my God, what's going to happen with the TV deal? Let's go to a live picture of my big spreadsheet and let's look at the ranking. And the answer to that question, is AW going to go out of business, is very much tied to this number right here. What is the ranking of Dynamite? Dynamite is where the vast portion of the value is in AEW's business is in the ranking of Dynamite compared to television more generally, not compared to WWE, but compared to television more generally. And when we factor in broadcast on its night, it's averaging in the quarter number 12, which is better than it was doing last year. If we look just at cable programs, cable originals, it's the data that we have at hand. And in this quarter, it's averaging number 5, which is exactly the same as it was doing a year ago. Is Dynamite's ranking dropping? No. How's Collision doing? It's number 14, which is, of course, not as well as it was doing in Q2, where viewership was much higher and it was a novel show, and maybe more energy was put into it. But it's doing okay. I wouldn't say that this is another, certainly it's not another Dynamite. It's not another 2 hours of Dynamite, but it is doing better than Rampage is, which is averaging 26 in the quarter. So Dynamite, as long as these numbers, especially Dynamite, as long as this number is in the top 5, which it is, there's a lot of value here for Dynamite, and we'll see what happens in terms of, we've got reports coming from Matt Bellany that Tony Khan was disappointed with the TV deal. We got the Wrestling Observer, running that, and AEW sources denying that they're disappointed. Well, they've not signed the TV deal. Apparently, WBD has offered AEW something, but whatever it is, not so good that AEW is ready to sign right now, as according to Bellany from Puck, the exclusive negotiating window ending in July. So I think I guessed roughly that time period. Because that would give, if it's July 1st, let's say, just hypothetically, that would give, it'll be a round number in terms of a half a year. Because that deal is going to expire at the end of this year, the AEW TV deal. So that would give them a round number of 6 months, if you can call that a round number, to potentially negotiate with others. Or maybe as it comes more and more clear, perhaps by the day, that NBA is not returning to TNT after the current NBA deal is done, then maybe that causes AEW to become even more in demand by WBD, and maybe WBD will make a deal at the 11th hour at the end of this month or something. Who knows? In any case, I think AEW is in a decent position. No, this is not WWE. No, this is not the NFL. It's not the NBA. It's not college football, but it is a pretty good value product, especially anchored by Dynamite being as highly ranked on its night as it is. And therefore, fortunately for many YouTubers and podcasters and Twitter accounts, there will be AEW will probably be around for the indefinite foreseeable future, so there can continue to be doom content put out about it as AEW is really contributing to that economy. So I think AEW will be okay. Probably, my prevailing belief continues to be is that AEW will make a new TV deal and will probably enough for them to be profitable. And WWE is their deals are all done, so it's kind of a moot point for potentially 20 years if the Netflix deal goes as long as that does. Okay, back to our slides. That's the end of the popularity story. So we'll do another one here. Okay, so an update on the Grant. Did you know that WWE is a part of this lawsuit? The Janelle Grant, the former WWE employee, who is suing WWE as well as Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. In fact, that is the way that this United States District Court, District of Connecticut federal civil case is titled. It's titled Janelle Grant Plaintiff versus World Wrestling Entertainment, Inc. et al. And the et al. Is Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. Anyway, as we've been covering in a great deal of depth, and no, we won't stop covering it, this is a civil lawsuit, and it looks like maybe it's some of this might be heading to arbitration, unless the judge has not made any decision about that yet. It's not gotten that far yet. There's still debates to be had there, but we saw on May 30th, which was that was Thursday, right? May 30th, yeah, the appearance. Let's just read this very short filing. I love reading filings. The clerk of this court and all parties of record, that's who's being addressed here. In addition to counsel already of record, please enter my appearance as counsel for the United States of America. Sarah Mortizavi, Assistant United States Attorney, respectfully submitted by Damian Williams, who's the United States Attorney. If you look up his name, he is the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, who are investigating something, and we have many reports to shine some light on what they might be investigating. So we have federal attorneys, the United States assistant attorney from the Southern District of New York intervening, and as we know now, they have requested that this lawsuit be put on hold and be put on hold for 6 months. So what we got in the docket on Thursday was that notice of appearance, but we also got two other entries on the docket. Don't you love looking at dockets? And we also have two entries with sealed documents. And if you go on Pacer or Court Listener, you can't read those. They are sealed. And who knows what they might be? Maybe they have something to do with explain to the court that there's an investigation here, and that's why we're intervening here. So why would they intervene? Perhaps because, as I understand it, not a lawyer, but as I understand it, why would they intervene is that they want to get to the evidence first before anybody else gets to the evidence. Now, this thing looked like it was heading towards maybe to some extent to arbitration, but for some reason, it seems that the federal investigation, potentially criminal investigation, wants to get to the evidence before the civil case gets to the evidence. And we did have we do know that this is a 6 month hold. Could always be extended, I suppose, but we do know that this is going to be a 6 month hold. So I'm guessing you won't see any action on this civil suit until towards the end of this year, maybe November or so. As we continue on with this case, and in an article on WrestleNomics.com, which is free for everyone to read, there was I did get some quotes from C.J. Donald, who is a corporate lawyer and an instructor at a law school. He explained that, you know, it just so happens if you look at the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, there is some language in there about how a civil case can be stayed, which is the term of art for what's happening here with the case being put on hold. A case can be stayed if there is a criminal investigation happening, and that aligns with what just happened. Now, what might they be investigating? Well, as we know, in June 2022, the Wall Street Journal reported that the WWE board was probing secret $3 million hush pact. You gotta call it a pact if you're in big media. And that is the $3 million agreement between Vince McMahon and Janelle Grant that was being referred to in that very first story. Of course, there was more to follow there, as we learned about. Well, actually, there's $12 million in hush money to four different women. That number went up to $14.6 million. And then we got There it is, in August of 2022. And that number got up even higher, of course, because there was some Trump money involved in there in terms of this is money that Vince McMahon slash WWE decided to compensate Trump with by not, I guess, paying him in a more traditional way, but giving money to the Trump Foundation, maybe to avoid some taxes there. I don't know. But anyway, that number got up to $19.6 million because we had an extra $5 million in there. So who's investigating WWE or what? Or not WWE. They might be investigating WWE, but what is being investigated? Could it just be the fact of those expenses? And it's important to note that those expenses, the scandal in terms of a public news story and what the public is consuming is that, hey, look, Vince McMahon was paying millions and millions of dollars to keep women silent who had allegations of sexual misconduct against them. That's the really harmful thing to branding and sponsorships and a public relations story, right? But what made this something that, besides that factor, what also made this something that the board of directors had to deal with was that these were secret payments that nobody besides the parties involved really knew about. The company didn't know about them. And actually, WWE is a publicly traded company and publishes financial reports to the public so that the public can buy stock if they want to, or buy more or buy less, so that they can understand the value of this company. They have to have some disclosures. That's what the SEC is for. And they did not report some $20 million over the course of 15 years or so. So there had to be corrections. There were unrecorded expenses. And when Vince McMahon resigned for the first time in July of 2022, the Wall Street Journal reported that this is, again, July 2022. So what's being investigated here is a question that I'm trying to examine here. And this July 2022 report says new federal investigations into the deepening hush money scandal enveloping WWE hastened the retirement of its chief executive. New federal investigations urged him to retire, according to people familiar with the matter. The Securities and Exchange Commission, one of my favorite government entities, and federal prosecutors have launched inquiries into payments made by Mr. McMahon to settle allegations of sexual misconduct. The media company, okay. The media company, and this is something from their own disclosures, the media company WWE said on Monday that it has received regulatory, investigative, and enforcement inquiries, subpoenas, or demands in connection with the millions of dollars in hush money. So who's investigating WWE? The SEC, at least at this time, and federal prosecutors. No additional detail really is known beyond that, at least at this time. And this does relate to mentioning in their filings that they have all these unrecorded expenses, $14.6 million. Eventually, that would become $19.6 million because of the Trump payments, were not known about by the company at this time. So they had to go back and correct their financial statements. Does that constitute a crime? You'd have to ask a lawyer. Is that part of what's being investigated here? I mean, if you've got the SEC investigating you, probably. And then we have another NDA payment, as the Wall Street Journal reported in January 2023, just after Vince forced his way back into the company at that point, regretting, I guess, that he actually resigned and forced his way back in the company with his controlling voting power, which he no longer has today. But we got a report in January 2023, headline, WWE's Vince McMahon settles with ex-referee who accused him of rape. That is Rhea Chatterton. A multi-million dollar settlement averts a public legal fight as executive chairman pursues possible sale, which of course eventually that sale did happen. We don't know exactly what the dollar amount was that Rhea Chatterton agreed to with Vince McMahon, but the journal here reporting that it is a multi-million dollar settlement. There's an earlier report that she was looking for. I think it was around $11 million or something like that. In any case, I'm struggling to read WWE's filings as I reread them, as who doesn't, and look at something that they mentioned and wondering if the Chatterton NDA payment is included in here, because we have sometime after this, in early 2023, we do have this sentence from W's filings, which says subsequent to our restatement of unrecorded expenses. So they've already made corrections at this point. WWE was informed of certain additional claims which have been settled by Mr. McMahon. That seems consistent with the Rita Chatterton agreement. Okay. Reading on, when the amounts became probable and estimable, for the fourth quarter of 2022, including consideration of events that occurred subsequent to December 31st, 2022, the company recorded an additional $7.4 million of expenses that Mr. McMahon has or will make all related payments personally. So that part means that, as I understand it, he's paying for these expenses personally. Nonetheless, we do have to recognize those payments. We do have to recognize those as expenses on our own publicly disclosed statements. Because there are so many NDAs here, it's hard to parse whether this $7.4 million represents only the Rita Chatterton agreement, or maybe there's other things factored in, because we know that these NDA payments are made in installments and not just all in one lump sum, as, for example, has been described by Janelle Grant in her lawsuit. So anyway, maybe that's some impression of what the Rita Chatterton agreement was valued at. And to review, what are the allegations against Vince McMahon? Oh, and by the way, John Laurinaitis is involved in this as well. Laurinaitis, there are allegations of sexual misconduct against him related to Janelle Grant, related to a WWE employee in 2012. An agreement of $1.5 million was made with that WWE employee in 2012. And in addition, what other sexual misconduct allegations have there been against Vince McMahon? We know Janelle Grant in 2019 to 2022. We know Rita Chatterton alleges that Vince McMahon raped her in 1986 in a limousine. There's an NDA there. There is a WWE manager in 2006 who alleges sexual misconduct. A wrestler in 2005 who alleges sexual misconduct. This is all with Vince McMahon. WWE contractor in 2008 who alleges sexual misconduct related to Vince McMahon. A spa manager. So now we're outside of WWE employees now. Now we have a spa manager in California in 2011 alleging sexual misconduct against Vince McMahon. A tanning salon employee in Florida in 2006, I believe the year is, alleging sexual misconduct against Vince McMahon. So that's the series of allegations against Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. Those are the ones that have been, in almost all these cases, right? We don't know their names, but we know through Wall Street Journal reporting, and it's essentially backed up by disclosures that WWE has had to make and corrections to its financial statements that it's had to make, that these are the various allegations against them. Okay, so what's being investigated here? Could it just be the financial issues, the lack of disclosing that Vince spent millions of dollars in NDA payments? Maybe that's all that's being investigated here. Maybe it's not there isn't an investigation into criminal sexual misconduct. Maybe, until you read this article, if you believe it, from the Wall Street Journal in February, just a few months ago. Headline, Federal Prosecutors Investigate Vince McMahon Sex Trafficking Allegations. Sub-headline, authorities have been interviewing women who accuse longtime WWE boss of sexual misconduct. Federal authorities have been investigating sexual assault and sex trafficking allegations against WWE co-founder Vince McMahon, according to people familiar with the investigation. Prosecutors in New York in recent months have been in contact with women who have accused McMahon of sexual misconduct, the people said. So that sounds like a criminal investigation into Vince McMahon's alleged sexual misconduct and sexual assault. Which leads us all to believe, which is a 20-minute way of saying, what's being investigated here? It's, according to the Wall Street Journal, allegations of sexual assault and sex trafficking, which is exactly what Janelle Grant is alleging as well in her civil suit, right? The Grant civil suit is a civil suit. It is not a criminal suit. It is a civil suit, and the damages presumably would be in the form of money paid by the defendants to Janelle Grant if there is a judgment there. This, a criminal case, of course, could result in non-monetary penalties. Okay. On the bright side for WWE, we do have some information about WrestleMania, and WrestleMania made how much money? We know, thanks to the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission, thanks to their response to a records request from WrestleNomics, we know that WrestleMania Night 2 is the new record holder for the highest gate in pro wrestling history. How much money are we talking about here? $18.4 million. Oh, okay, because I'm including fees here. Without fees, $18.4 million is the highest pro wrestling gate of all time. If you add in fees, you get to about $19.7 million for night two of WrestleMania. Night one held the record for 24 hours when it drew $17.7 million before fees, about 19 with fees. So the biggest gates ever for any pro wrestling show of all time are WrestleMania 40 this year in Philadelphia, night one and night two, with night two being the leader. However, if you adjust for inflation, WrestleMania night one and night two are the number three and number four highest gates of all time. They trail only WrestleMania 32 and WrestleMania, 35? So WrestleMania 32 is the Dallas 2016 WrestleMania, which, adjusting for inflation in today's dollars, is about $22 million, 17.3 at the time. And the MetLife Stadium WrestleMania, which I believe was just under $17 million in real-time dollars and adjusts today to $21 million, those numbers with fees. So just above the WrestleMania gates of this year when adjusting for inflation. So that's where WWE is. And of course, it's been a two-day event since 2021, since the first partial capacity event for WWE.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And the merchandise rankings, I've made these slides engagement proof. So if you want to, and I don't discourage anyone from taking screenshots of this podcast and posting it throughout the internet universe. But if you do, you will have to share the Patreon advertisement here. So these are reports that I'm posting monthly on Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And we're looking at, how do I do this, by the way? I have various scripts and codes, Python code, that will collect this data, collect the order of the best-selling items lists from WWE's shop and AEW's shop, the online shops. And basically, I do a reverse rank value, as you can see mentioned on the screen here. And we go through each month. At the end of the month, we count it all up and say, well, who's had the most items most highly ranked based on a reverse rank value analysis. And these are the results for May of 2024. We're looking at WWE Shop here. You cannot look at WWE Shop and AEW Shop together. They're not the same website. They're different websites, so we cannot look at them together. So this is WWE Shop, and we're looking at apparel only. It's important to point out. So what does apparel mean? Apparel means t-shirts, basically clothing. We are not including things like masks or replica belts or anything else, only apparel. And what we have is, who's number one for this month? Again, these are estimates only. Number one is CM Punk. Number two is Jey Uso, Yeet. And number three is Cody Rhodes. Number four, the young upstart, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And number five, despite not being on television at all in May, right, is The Rock. And we'll look at this year-to-date also in a moment. But let's look at AEW. Number one this month is AEW, with like a lot of, driven by a lot of DVDs and things like that. And it's been number one most of the months here, I think. In any case, who's number two after AEW's brand itself is Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay, followed by Ring of Honor, followed by Swerve Strickland at number 4, followed by Adam Copeland at number 5, he of Broken Tibia fame. So that's where we are in just a 31-day period, and I figured, you know what, why not? Let's just look at the whole year, year-to-date, since we have been covering this now. We've been collecting this data, I think, since late 2022 now. So let's look at the entire year, year-to-date for WWE, and we get who do we estimate is moving the most merchandise. Cody Rhodes, year-to-date, followed by CM Punk. He has been in the company for, you know, since the beginning of the year, because he came over in November. Jey Uso, number 3. The Yeet shirts are ranking that highly. Roman Reigns at number 4, and then the WWE brand itself at number 5. We have a full top 10 lists that I'm not going through the entirety of. We do have these not just in the top 5, but in the top 10 on Patreon, if you want to see if, oh my god, if your fave is validated by these results here. And then if we look at AEW year-to-date, the top category is AEW. Number 2 is Will Ospreay, just as it was for the month of May. Number 3 is Swerve Strickland. Number 4 is Sting, who retired. And number 5 is Ring of Honor. Again, this goes to the top 10 in the report for subscribers. So there's that. Do I want to say anything more about this? I don't know. I mean, I think this does give you a suggestion about who's, well, it gives you an estimate of who's actually moving the most merchandise. I probably would not have guessed that Will Ospreay is ranking as well as he is, but he is. I'm not going to get into this, but this is telling you about who you should push and who you should really get behind. Maybe this is one item that should be considered among others. You always want a preponderance of factors to consider, but this would be one that I would consider. And of course, the companies themselves have the real data. They have the real sales data that they can look into and consider should they wish to. So there's that. Again, the full lists are at patreon.com/WrestleMonics. Moving on, a brief run through these quarter hours. Is there anything meaningful in these quarter hours? Here's my opinion about quarter hours. Quarter hours are extremely noisy. We're trying to hear a signal. We're trying to find something meaningful about what content or who's a draw. And quarter hours don't do a great job of that. They do better than rolling dice, but there's a lot of noise to get through. So what I tend to believe is only the loudest signals are really meaningful. So for example, of a signal that might not be that meaningful, let's look at quarter hour 2 here of SmackDown that did buck the trend in a positive way here. Maybe this is meaningful. This quarter hour had a Nia Jax live promo, the tail end of a Nia Jax versus Bianca Belair match, some backstage stuff, which I don't think is especially meaningful because it was because those things are short, and then it did have a Carmelo Hayes promo. Maybe that means something. If I see these people or that type of content repeatedly be associated with such bright green boxes, then I say, well, maybe that's meaningful. Maybe this is, you know, this person or this content is really gaining some momentum. But I don't know that I see really any strong stories here in the quarter hours. The thing about the quarter hours, you can use them to validate or invalidate, I think, just about any narrative. So I don't see any big, strong stories here. Yes, we do have a Cody Rhodes and Logan Paul live promo. That was the peak of the show. But in terms of quarter to quarter growth, it wasn't that much bigger than it normally is. It did come pretty close in total viewership, but not that close. So I'm quibbling here a lot to say that there's not an overwhelming story here that I see, but sometimes there is. If we look to Rampage, are there any big stories here? Well, this final quarter hour on Rampage, which consisted of a Alex Windsor and Anna Jay versus Chris Statlander Willow Nightingale match, that did a lot more growth in the final quarter than it usually does. This was at that weird time slot, though, so maybe as you got closer to the better time slot of 7 o'clock, the audience grew more than it usually did. Do I see anything overwhelmingly telling here? Not really. Okay, and we move on to Collision. And is there something meaningful here in Collision? We see some negative stories towards the end of the show. Remember, this was on TBS and not TNT. So I don't know if that makes a big deal. It didn't in the demo. The demo was about as strong as it usually is for Collision at a 0.15 PTN 49 rating. Are there huge stories here? I'm not sure. Maybe there's a negative story on the right here in the demo for this this show that ended with the Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, Satnam Singh versus Brian Danielson and FTR match. So I would say not a hit. Is this a particularly negative story? Maybe, but the double red marks here are in the quarter hour before. So we continue on, struggling to find something that I think is actually meaningful here. And for Raw, you know, maybe we have this Chad Gable Otis backstage angle. I don't know, that's backstage, probably not that long. Okay, then he had an ad break here. Alpha Academy, Sami Zayn live angle. Maybe that, I mean, this in hour three, when this quarter hour usually tanks by about 8%, this grew the audience by 4% and 5% respectively in total viewership in the demo. Maybe that's meaningful. Maybe. And then everything else is, well, we have a negative story here, Carlito and Rey Mysterio, unfortunately. And we have nothing that jumps off the page here for the rest of Raw, I would say. And then we'll go to NXT. Okay, where I do think, man, maybe we have a real story here. In NXT, we have in the middle of the show, the high point of the show, which is the surprise appearance of Jordynne Grace interacting with Roxanne Perez live promo. But in the quarter hour before that, we did have growth where you'd expect to see growth in terms of seeing this, you know, involvement from Sexy Red backstage. Is that where the rest of her involvement was, though? Maybe it was elsewhere in the show. We do have, you know, double green boxes here for this quarter hour three, which had what, Ridge Holland and Riley Osborne post-match backstage stuff, and the Idris Anafe and Malik Black versus the OC match, which grew the audience a lot more than usual. And then we have a bunch of red boxes out here too. So I am inclined to say that, you know, you would think that the appearance of somebody from TNA, which is kind of a big story to wrestling fans and wrestling media, at least, was that a big story to the audience? Well, it did pique the audience. But 9 o'clock, I bet is often a quarter hour where the audience is peaked. But okay. What about Dynamite? Did Dynamite have any real stories here? We do have a strong top of the hour here at 9 o'clock where you've got really big, green boxes here, up 16%, up 13% respectively in the demo and total viewership, when usually this quarter hour is flat in terms of growth. This is a comparison over the last 90 days. Okay. Outside of the skewed quarter hour one because of the Big Bang Theory, this was the peak for the demo. This was was not the peak for the demo. Quarter hours after that were higher. In any case, in terms of growth, this was the strongest by far. Okay, what was in this 9 o'clock quarter hour? Don Callis, Orange Cassidy, Trent Barretta, Chris Statlander, Stokely Hathaway live angle, some backstage stuff, and Mercedes Moné versus Sky Blue in Mercedes Moné's first match, which flowed into the following quarter where the audience continued to grow a few percent in a quarter hour that usually does not. Chris Jericho in the 8:30 quarter hour with his live angle involving Chris Jericho, Big Bill, Brian Keith, Hook, Samoa Joe, that also did well, which also included the first portion of the Rocky Romero versus John Moxley match. So I would say the Mercedes Moné match performed particularly well. I've seen people harping on the fact that the Chris Jericho segment did well, but that the unadvertised even Mercedes Moné match did well as well, despite her appearances on television in general so far, not the big business Dynamite number did not do particularly well. Did a pretty normal Dynamite rating relative to what Dynamite was doing in surrounding weeks. But this match of hers responded positively. I would say, well, let's see. The viewership responded positively, coinciding with where her content was. Okay. That we can say. And that's quarter hours. And I think this is the last item here today, is that here's some Python code. I did some cage match analysis, yes, cagematch.net, and I went through all the match ratings since the 80s and forward. I know I've got 1950 on here, but there's not that much before 1980. So we're focusing on 1980, and I'm saying, first of all, let's consolidate promotion names. The question I want to answer here is, what in the composite opinion of people who are rating matches on Cage Match, in the wisdom of crowds, that is the Cage Match inmates, what is their composite opinion about what the great eras are for specific promotions? And do they match our opinions or our intuitions about what those great eras are? All Japan in the 90s, Jim Crockett Promotions in the 80s, New Japan in the 2010s. Does that reflect when we look at cage match ratings? So first thing I have to do is clean this up a little bit and consolidate some promotion names, which I did. Okay, that's interesting. And then I broke this down into decades. I standardized the values. This is exciting, isn't it? I standardized the values. So in the 80s in particular, that's relevant because we have a disproportionate cluster of high ratings later in time versus earlier in time. So what I did was by each year, I just took, give me the highest rating for any match in any year. And let's just standardize that so that we're looking at what are the great matches within a given year. Okay, and then I consolidated that back down to decades. Finally, we get the results. And what are the promotions in the 80s that have the most great matches? And I just took it arbitrary. Give me anything that's rated at a 9.25 in that standardized value or better. And the answer is, in the 80s, number one, All Japan Pro Wrestling. Followed by New Japan, followed by this consolidation of WCW / Jim Crockett Promotion / NWA. So it's not anything in the NWA. It's the specific Mid-Atlantic NWA. Followed by All Japan Women's with just five, and Continental Wrestling Association with five, which I think is Memphis. And then the 90s. What's number one in the 90s? Of course, it's All Japan in the 90s, followed by All Japan Women's in the 90s, followed by New Japan, WB / WF, well, it's only WF at that time, and CMLL, which is consolidated with EMLL. And then in the 2000s, Ring of Honor in the 2000s, the first decade of the 2000s, followed by WWE, NOAH, falling off, and NOAH not as highly ranked as maybe I would have guessed, but 25 matches past that arbitrary threshold for NOAH, followed by WXW and Cage Match probably leaning heavy in their following of WXW as it's a German promotion, a German website, followed by a measly 9 for New Japan in the embattled decade of the 2000s amid Inokiism and things of that nature. In the 2010s, New Japan reigns supreme by far, more than doubling the next nearest promotion, which is WWE, followed by PWG Stardom in All Japan. And then in the 2020s, the current decade, some 3.5 years into it, I guess before 20, 21, 22, 23, some 4.5 years into it, into this decade. And we have number one is still New Japan, edging out All Elite Wrestling 47-38, followed by WWE with 25, Stardom and TNA / Impact after that. And across all of these decades since the 80s, New Japan is number one, followed by WWE, followed by All Japan, Ring of Honor, and Pro Wrestling NOAH. So there you go. There's no debating that. Those are objective facts. And if those aren't your favorites, I guess you're wrong. So that's all for this week. If you would like to listen next week, that this is a podcast, WrestleNomics Radio, that is exclusive for subscribers every single week. It's free for everyone on the first Sunday of every month. Otherwise, it's on Sunday for subscribers only at patreon.com/ WrestleNomics. You get access to the monthly reports. There'll be monthly reports still to come about live events, about YouTube that I have to work on. And if you want to sign up for $5, you get access to all of that, plus my TV ratings reports that come out every single day, the show reports that I do, the what else do I do? I have the quarter hour reports, assuming I get them, which I always have for the last few years. Those are all there for subscribers, everything, all that at the $5 tier. If you want access to my big spreadsheets as well, in addition to everything else that I just mentioned, that's at the $10 tier. Again, all of that is at patreon.com/ WrestleNomics. So thanks everybody for tuning in. And talk to you again next time. And I'll be back free for everyone with Pollock and Thurston on Wednesday on all post-wrestling and WrestleNomics platforms. Bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. call, quickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.